next time for the Naples Mac Help Podcast with Apple Certified Support Professional, Jeff Bohr.
Welcome back, listeners. Charlie McDermott, producer of the show, co-host here with, yes, Jeff Bohr. Jeff, how you doing?
Great this morning, Charlie. Thank you.
Well, you know, I, as I've said over and over again, love these episodes. And today you're going to uncover, kind of reveal, you know, some of these terms that are just thrown out there. I mean, you live in this space, you get, you know, various acronyms and terminology, but many of us, you know, just go right over our heads. So let's dive into, you know, help us, Jeff, help us understand some of these tech terms.
Right. So I'm going to start going through the list. And so one of the things you might hear often is what to do when your email is having problems. And you've probably heard the terms IMAP, IMAP, and SMTP and such. Mm-hmm. And basically, IMAP stands for Internet Mail Access Protocol. So if you remember, when you only had one computer, maybe 10, 15 years ago, that's when POP, which stands for Post Office Protocol, was in play. So with Post Office Protocol, an email comes in on the device and it stays there until you delete it. And if you have a phone and an iPad and a computer, for example, you'd have to delete the email 3 times with Post Office Protocol, which was fine when you only had one device. But when people started using multiple devices, they came out with IMAP, Internet Mail Access Protocol. And that means if you have multiple devices and you delete a message on one, it deletes from everywhere. So basically, IMAP is a little sturdier. And if you still have POP, that's a handover from like an Earthlink account or something for years, and you have to delete it on every device, you know, 3 times, multiple times a day, then it might be worth switching to IMAP, which is easy to do.
Earthlink, is that still a thing?
Earthlink, yeah, I have plenty of people with Earthlink emails, and a lot of them are using IMAP still. Wow. So, but yeah, so IMAP, POP, and SMTP. So SMTP stands for Standard Mail Transfer Protocol, and that's how mails get sent. So basically, SMTP is for outgoing, IMAP is for incoming. So like if you have, sometimes you might have an issue with your outgoing mail and they say, change your SMTP server. The standard is 25, but another one might be 587. So in the beginning days of the internet, you have these little post office boxes like, so 25 was the post office for all outgoing mail. Well, then what happened was when the spammers started and they started sending out mail, they kind of shut down post office 25 and moved to post office box 587. So those are some numbers you might hear when you're troubleshooting mail is which port is your mail on? And it might be 25, which is the kind of the old style that's being shut down, or the new style, which is 587. So these are all things you might hear about.
Oh, my goodness.
So another one that you might hear about all the time is SMS. So SMS stands for short message service, or basically text messages. So basically, no one ever says short message service because it takes too long. So they just say, I got a text or whatever. So that's another one. SMS in short message service is the same as a text message. So don't let yourself get, overdrawn into some of these acronyms when you don't need them, when you can substitute another word for them. Another one that comes up a lot is HTML.
Yes.
So you might heard of HTML and you're like, what is that? There's an HTML web page. Well, HTML stands for Hypertext Markup Language, HTML. And that is the language and the code that websites were designed with for years and years. It's still kind of the basis of even WordPress and some other technologies that have made web design a little easier. Mm-hmm. But if you ever go to the view menu of a web page and say view source, you'll see a bunch of text that's gibberish, and that's HTML. So it's like a foreign language, but it makes the web pages look nice. So there's always a code behind it. So just like in a house, you know, once you move in, there's carpet and there's walls and everything's painted. Well, you can't really see the frame of the house and all that. Mm-hmm. It's in the background, the plumbing, the electrical wiring, but that's what HTML is. So HTML is the back end of what you don't see on a website. So and it takes a lot of code and a lot of hours to do that. So that's why if you've ever looked into designing a website, it's kind of not that cost effective because you don't see all the stuff that goes in the background, which is the HTML. Mm. So Another thing that might come up often is an IP address. So IP stands for Internet Protocol. So basically, every device that you have that connects to the internet uses an IP address. So it could be a refrigerator. It could be a computer. It could be a smart TV. Each of those has an individual IP address that can identify it while it's on your local network. Now, the IP addresses are really for your local network, but the network provider could see an IP address, but they might not know what device it is. So the IP addresses are kind of anonymous, and they give you a gateway to the web. It's like if you're on a train, you have to have a ticket to get to your destination. That's what the IP address is. So the IP address, each component in your network has a dedicated IP address that doesn't conflict with anything else, because two items cannot have the same IP address. So typically your internet router or your modem in your house will assign those IP addresses, and they're kind of static, so they'll stay there. So if your IP address for your TV is with 21, it'll always be 21 until you replace the TV, and then it might jump up to 45 or something.
Okay.
IP addresses are a necessity for things that are going to be online.
How about
along with the IP address, you might have the request one time. So what is your ISP? So your ISP is your internet service provider. So your ISP might be Comcast, it might be Xfinity, it might be Summit, it might be Hotwire, it might be, you know, CenturyLink. So your ISP is whatever company is delivering the internet to you. So that's your internet service provider. Now, let's see. One other thing that we want to talk about is URL. So URL, you might say, enter the URL for this site, which might be apple.com or cnn.com. Well, the URL stands for the Universal Record Locator, which is Uniform Resource Locator. So basically, that's the language the web uses to make things a little more user-friendly. So like actually, when you go to Google, you type in google.com, which is the URL, but that actually has a IP address of like 10.0.16.45. It would be a lot harder to tell someone, hey, go to 10.0.16.45 than saying go to google.com. Right. So every company has a URL that makes their IP address a little easier to read, and it's a little more user-friendly. One that's big now is AI. And you've probably heard more about this lately with the onset of ChatGPT and OpenAI and such. But AI stands for artificial intelligence. So artificial intelligence is using computers and technology to do tasks that humans might do. So basically, with AI now, you could say, you could go to openai.com, which is one of the big ones, and say, hey, I need ideas for Mother's Day, or I need ideas for a 10-year-old's birthday party. And it will scour the web, and in about 2 seconds, you'll have 8 or 9 suggestions. So if you want to play with this, the easiest thing to do is go to openai.com and then type in something like, give me a day's itinerary for whatever town you're from. So your town up north, you know, where you were born, that you know well, tell this program on the web to give you a day's itinerary there. And in about 3 seconds, it will spit out a full day visiting all the museums, all the restaurants, all the sites that you're familiar with. And it's pretty amazing.
Wow.
So artificial intelligence is, this stuff just came out maybe about 3 months ago, but it's already kind of in the mainstream. So that's something to try if you want to try it and just say, hey, give me a day's itinerary in St. Louis or wherever you're from. And look how accurate it is and how time sensitive all the suggestions it makes are going to be incredible.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, AI has been all over the news. Oh my Lord.
Yeah. It's been real big lately, but and you hear about things like, oh, you can write a paper, it could write a essay, but the teachers have already gotten AI tools themselves to determine whether a student has used it. So if any kids are listening, don't try to get this to write your term paper or your book report, because the teachers will be able to tell. So That's a big thing that's going to be a lot of controversy in the future, I'm sure. But right now, it can be fun and play with it a little and get to know what it can do. So you can ask it almost anything, and it will give you some responses. Now, one thing you might have heard about before, but you might not have seen too much lately because the web has gotten so big, is a blog. So a blog is short for a weblog, which is basically like an online diary or journal. So Pinterest and some other sites kind of do this kind of format where it's kind of a day by day or subject by subject topic. So a blog used to be popular when the web started just for people to get their news out there. So, you know, you could say, oh, my brother-in-law has a blog about gardening that he's been doing for 8 years and he just writes about flowers and plants and stuff, you know. So a blog can be a very handy way for someone that's not too comfortable with the web to get in there and make some content that will, you know, reach a wider audience than just your family and friends. Another technology that a lot of people have questions about is something as simple as Bluetooth. So you have Bluetooth and then you have Wi-Fi. Well, Bluetooth is a short range connection between devices like printers, some kind of scanners, a lot of mobile speakers and such use Bluetooth. So that's why you can take your speaker to the beach and listen to it without a wire because of Bluetooth. So Bluetooth typically works between 30 and 50 feet. So if you get too far from it, you'll lose the connection. But it's a really good, stable way of keeping connected to something like a speaker or a printer without any wires. So Bluetooth is a wireless technology, and they keep improving that. So the Bluetooth that was there 5 years ago could only reach like 20 feet. Now it's up to 50 or 60 feet. So the Bluetooth is expanding, and it's in everything from watches to phones to printers to speakers. Some appliances in the kitchen might have Bluetooth. So it's a way to link two devices together with a short type of connection and a stable connection.
Very cool. I remember you talking about, what was it, the Sonos speakers back in your, it was like the pre-Christmas episode.
Yeah, my holiday guide. Yeah, the Sonos speakers are Bluetooth.
Yeah, okay.
And some items, some devices will use a combination of Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, which Sonos does, for a more stable connection. So Wi-Fi typically goes a lot, has a better range than Bluetooth.
Yeah.
So if a device can take advantage of it, you'll have the best of both worlds. The portability and the range. So with a combination of Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, you can do that. Now, another question I get a lot is, what are cookies? So what happened was, you might have heard about cookies before, but you've probably seen them more recently because the United States government, after the European Union did this, made it more transparent. So if a company is collecting cookies, then they have to notify you. And when you go to a web page, you're starting to see in the past couple of months, do you want to allow cookies? Do you want to allow cookies? And that's because it's not because they haven't been using cookies all along, but they've just been required to notify you that they have cookies.
Okay.
So cookies are small bits of data that are left on your computer after visiting websites. So cookies are why, if you go to Google and you're searching for some rain boots because you're going to go fly fishing and you need some wading boots, and then you start seeing ads for wading boots on the side of CNN and other pages that you're going to, that's because of cookies. So cookies are kind of harmless. Cookies are what, remember, when you go to the Weather Channel, that you're on your local town and not somewhere in Washington State. So some cookies are kind of handy. Cookies have no personal identifying information. However, some sites could, if you enter data on a page, cookies could collect an address or an email.
Okay.
But remember, 99% of cookies make the internet easier to use. So when you go to Amazon, when you go to some site, that they will remember you basically better. You know, Amazon keeps cookies so that when you go there, you don't have to log in and enter your credit card every time. So a lot of cookies are for convenience.
Yeah.
And they're not harmful. But it's a little scarier now because the websites are required to let you know they're having cookies. So people are more aware of it now.
Now, what happens if you just X out of it? Does that just keep coming back every time you land on the site, or is that?
Well, if you decline to accept cookies, it'll probably come back about two or three times.
Yeah.
But usually the easiest way is just to accept it, because if you decline it, you could lose some functionality of the website.
Yeah.
So basically, accepting it is just kind of what we were doing all along. We just never had to hit the button.
Yeah.
So they just have to notify you of cookies.
All right. Well, that's good to know. I've always wondered what that was. Yeah. Especially, as I said recently, you see that on all the websites. So
exactly.
That explains it. Yeah.
So another big one, a term that we hear a lot is fishing spelled with a PH. So regular fishing, you know, you cast out a reel and you reel in some fish. Well, with fishing with a PH, what happens is the web hackers will send out mass emails, and they might send out 10,000 emails to 10,000 people they got off of some list that they stole or hacked into a company and got. And it might look, you might get an email that looks like it's from Chase Bank or from the Geek Squad or from McAfee saying that you've been charged for $99 for a month of service or something, or some similar, you know, big expense. Yeah. You might have had a big screen TV that was being delivered to Miami and you're in Naples and you're wondering what's going on. And there's always a phone number there. But when you call the phone number, that's the hook. And they'll start reeling you in. And believe me, these guys are smooth talkers. If they were legitimate salespeople, they would make millions of dollars.
Yeah.
But if you ever see an email that looks like phishing, just delete it immediately. Do not call the number, because they are pretty good at talking people into complying with requests for credit cards, and then they go to town. So this kind of phishing is a bad kind of phishing rather than the leisurely phishing for, you know, fish and dinner and stuff. So just remember, if it looks any at all suspicious, then delete it, because if it's that important, they're going to call you or knock on your door.
Yeah, that's great advice. Those emails look so legitimate. But what I've found, and I have made those calls every now and then, because you know, you're not thinking, you react, but the sender email is typically off, right?
If it says Chase Bank and then you hover over it or click on it, it'll show you some gobbledygook.
Yeah. Yeah.
But a lot of times I've gotten emails lately that look like they're from me. So that's called spoofing, where spoofing is where they can make it look like it's from someone else.
Yeah.
Even though it's not. So spoofing is a little different, because even if you click on the email, it'll say this is from Charlie McDermott and it's your email address, but it's not really. They've just put a mask over it.
Damn.
And there's no way to get to the real address when they do that. So spoofing is another thing that you have to kind of be aware of, that if it's suspicious, delete it. But even though it looks real, because something might look real, that's just because they spoofed an email address, like they can spoof phone numbers now.
Amazing.
Wow. So be cautious about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Another abbreviation that people see here a lot is USB. So USB has many iterations now. The typical USB that we've been used to for years and years is USB 3 or USB-A, which is your regular USB cord that would plug into a computer, a little rectangular connection, and the other end might plug into an iPhone, like it might have a Lightning or a micro USB, which could charge an Android or a Kindle, or a thicker square with rounded corners that could connect to a printer. So that was regular USB that we've been used to for years. Well, Apple and the entire world has agreed to go to a USB-C standard. So USB-C is a thinner cable. If you have a newer laptop or a newer iPad, for example, they have a lot thinner cable. The difference between USB-C and USB-A is, remember, if you put in USB-A, you had a 50-50 chance of getting it in the right way, or you had to flip it. Well, USB-C, it doesn't matter which way you enter it. It's right either way you put it in. So that little gymnastics with the printer or the you know, charging something is no longer an issue, because both sides are universal. USB-C can also transfer data, it can transfer power, and it can transfer video. So before, you had to have an HDMI cable, you had to have a power cable, you had to have, you know, three different cables. Mm-hmm. So in three different ports on your machine to connect a monitor, connect your power, and to connect a printer, for example. Well, now with USB-C, it can do all that. So it's a lot more versatile than regular USB.
Is that why new computers then have so fewer, you know, slots in the back?
Yeah, they have fewer ports, because USB-C is much more versatile than the other technologies before that.
Okay. So,
another thing that a lot of people don't know is the term, or the three letters WWW. So WWW stands for World Wide Web, but you used to have to type in www.amazon.com, www.cnn.com. Well, now, since the web is advanced and everything, you no longer need to type www before you type in an address. If you're going to cnn.com, just type in cnn.com. Just type in amazon.com. Just type in naplesmachelp.com. You do not have to put the www in there. It's just extra steps that won't make your results any different.
Okay. Okay. Good to know.
So yeah, that's about the most of the terms that I hear all the time that are kind of confusing to people. A last one that I'll do is that what's the difference between OLED and LED? So you might be searching for a monitor or a TV. Mm-hmm. So LED stands for light emitting diode, and that's been used since basically the late 90s, LED lights, and they don't get hot, but they have a lot of limited color range compared to OLED. So OLED stands for organic light emitting diode, and there aren't any organisms in there, but organic, there is carbon-based compounds in the construction of these lights, and that's why they call it organic. So it's not really like there's little parasites behind your TV moving around making colors, but the organic stands for the carbon compounds that are in there. So the OLED is capable of making a lot more solid blacks and bright whites than an LED.
Okay.
So LED is kind of fading out as OLED takes the forefront of this technology that is behind most screens. So you'll start seeing that more and often. But the organic is just a reference to the chemical compounds that are in the screen, not that there's any little, you know, moving parts in there. So that's a common misconception.
And is that for both computer screens as well as TV screens?
Yeah, computer screens. Mobile devices are starting to move to OLED screens. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the Samsung phones, I think the new iPhone, the new Apple Watch might have an OLED screen. Hmm. So it's just a little better technology that gives brighter, crisper colors and better blacks and purer whites. So this stuff changes so rapidly, but these terms are ones that will be around for a while. So they're kind of handy to know.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff as always. Wow. All right. As always, I took more and more notes and I love your advice on those phishing schemes, man. Just if it's that important, they will contact you. They will call you and that'll be that. So. Well, hey, you probably are wanted. In fact, I hear a phone in the background. They're going,
yeah, the doorbell. So, yeah, thank you.
I need help.
Always.
So I'll let you go help your clients and new clients. For those who want to get in touch, want to learn more, especially those both who live in the Southwest Florida area as well as beyond, you can help in both cases. Go ahead and let them know, Jeff.
Absolutely. My email is my name. So if you can spell Jeff Bohr, B-O-H-R. Jeff@jeffbohr.com. And you can also contact me through my website, which is naplesmachelp.com.
Super, super. Well, we'll see you real soon in the next episode. In the meantime, keep doing what you're doing. You have a great one, Jeff.
Thank you, Charlie. Have a great day. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Naples Mac Help Podcast. To learn more about Naples Mac Help, go to naplesmachelp.com or call 239-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-595-